And this is our final hour now with our special guest, David Darling. We'll take your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And David, what's the name of the new book you're working on that'll be out in June?
It's called Gravity's Arc, and it's the story of gravity from Aristotle to Einstein and beyond, Gravity's Arc.
Excellent.
And if people want more information about the book or anything else I do, if they go to my website, which is daviddarling.info, they'll get all the news on that.
You write in a very easy way for most of us to understand. You know, we're not physicists.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really the thing to aim for. If you're a scientist, you know, you can easily take too much for granted. You know, you're used to these concepts, you know, you're used to talking in kind of an academic way. Most people need, you know, analogies. They need to be able to relate what you're saying to their everyday life, you know, and it takes a number of years to develop that skill to talk in a kind of a, well, just like you're talking to a friend, you know.
That's right.
There's not a scientist, but, you know, you're talking in the pub at the bar, and they say, well, you know, what is this dark energy stuff? Or, you know, well, what do you think about life in the universe? And not to go off at the deep end, but just say, well, you know, just talk in ordinary words, a conversational tone.
As you're doing tonight.
That's what I try to do, yeah.
Same thing. Let's go to the phones. You ready?
Yep.
East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Joe, it's David.
Hi, David. And where are you calling from?
Temple, Texas.
Okay, sir. Go ahead.
Great show, man. I'm going to keep it short as I can, you know. And there's a lot more to this, but I'm going to try to make it as fast as possible. A real short comment,
all right.
Short question. I'll take the answer off there.
You got it.
Okay, I was stationed in West Germany in 1975 at a base. I won't go into those details, but I spoke to an officer, and he spoke of the same structures you spoke of, the one with the heavy-duty steel retaining.
What we thought was the anti-gravity machine, yeah.
Right. Okay, now you said that there was a structure bolted on top of one of them.
Yeah, there's an identical. If you look at the base, you know, if you go to the original henge-like structure, you look at that one, which is near this abandoned mine,
yeah.
And then you compare that with the photographs of a very, very similar-looking structure in a town that is, I don't know, but it's a neighboring town, and there is a very obvious structure sitting on top of it that Gerald Schelm, the investigator that did this work, describes as a cooling tower. And you can draw your own conclusions from that. That's just what he's reporting. That's not my finding.
You ever think that maybe that's a decoy?
Well, you know, that's you know, I mean, you know, you could certainly say that. You know, there's all sorts of explanation. I'm not sort of making any comment on it. I'm just saying that you look at the photographs yourself and draw your own conclusions. It could be a cover-up. It could be all sorts of things. He says it's a cooling tower. I don't know whether it is or not. But if you look under Schelm anti-gravity, you can see the photographs for yourself and draw your own conclusions, yeah.
All right, thanks, David. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I'm from Colorado.
All right, take it away.
And I got kind of a technical question for him. My question is, I was reading in Scientific American in the middle of the summer last year, one of their issues, middle of the summer last year, and they had a theory put out that as you go into a vacuum, as you know, mass creates gravity, okay? Mm-hmm. And mass will create, he was saying that mass created a negative gravity. As you go into a vacuum, wouldn't it create a positive gravity, thus pushing all matter apart? And the only way you would be able to measure this is over vast distances. You wouldn't be able to, like, be in a lab and measure this. And his theory was that you would have a positive gravity, which would be, as compared to the mass that you said that was visible, only, what, 4%?
Mm-hmm.
The overwhelming force in the universe would be a positive gravity.
Well, don't we have a positive gravity in the moment? Isn't that what gravity is?
We currently live in a negative gravity environment. You're attracted to center mass.
Oh, okay. You're talking in terms of potential energy. Okay.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, I haven't read the theory. I mean, it's very difficult for me to comment on something that I haven't seen, you know. What I would say, as far as if we're talking about positive gravity, as you term it, that is basically what how dark energy works. So if that is connected with it, and in some ways dark energy probably is connected with the quantum vacuum, then I would agree with what you're saying. But I haven't read the article, so it's difficult for me to sort of make any direct comment on that.
Well, this fellow didn't believe in dark energy and dark matter. He was trying to disprove it.
Okay. Well, I think he's in a minority there. If he's trying to disprove it, that's fine. But I think, you know, there's an overwhelming amount of evidence to suggest that they do exist. You would have to explain, for example, the new findings, which came out just a week or so ago, that actually put some numbers to dark matter. We now know that it's we now know roughly the temperature of it, and we know that it comes in you know, standard volumes of about 1,000 light years across. So we're actually putting parameters to it. And if you don't believe in dark energy, you've got to explain how the universe is accelerating faster and faster. So I think he's kind of in a minority there.
Well, it would explain the acceleration of it going faster and faster. It'd be a constant push, like a ball hitting a ball on a pool table. It would just keep pushing it faster and faster and faster along.
Okay.
To infinity.
Well, I mean, you know, there's certainly a lot of theories kicking around. All I can say is a possibility. I haven't read the article, so it's hard for me to comment any further on that.
By the way, I'm told that my great movie has already been done in the form of a Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, is that right? That's
so
too bad.
And I do remember it now. Maybe that's where my subconscious got the idea, David.
Good idea, though.
It was. Hey, mainstream science, how many of them believe in something spiritual as opposed to pure science?
Yeah, it's just, you know, you got to talk to these guys in private to get their private views on that. You know, the thing is, it's death to your career if you start talking outside the box.
Is it really?
Oh, you know, I mean,
why is that?
Well, it's just the system, isn't it? It's just the system. It's a terrible situation. But you openly, you know, at a scientific conference or what have you, or in a report, if you start talking about UFOs or spiritual matters or anything like that, you know, it puts a cloud over the rest of your research, and that's why scientists really are gagged in what they can say. You know, talk to them privately; they'll give you all kinds of ideas, and it's surprising what they come out with. You know, but they, you know, try to get them to say something for the record, and they just shut up like a clam.
All right, Wes, let's go to our wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
B, Mr. Norris.
Well, if it isn't, Jay-Z.
It is I, Jay-Z, and I want to put a question to Mr. Scientist here tonight.
You?
I want to ask know-it-all. Where do you get a million years that we've been here a million years? Where is your proof?
This
and
is Jay-Z, David.
I want to ask
David.
The question, and I want to have his answer, and I will rebuttal.
All right.
Okay.
Where do you get a million years?
Where do I get a million years for what?
For existence of this planet. How do you verify that?
I don't even think he brought that up, Jason.
I did hear you say a million. You know what? Let me tell you what. Where's your proof?
Well, you've got to get your facts right. First of all, I didn't say the planet had been around for a million years.
You said
a
million years.
No, I didn't. And if you don't get your facts right, it's hard to argue. I said that the human race in its modern form had been around for a million years. I said the planet had been around for 4.6 million years.
And where is the documentation on that?
Well,
because
you know, you put a question mark over your credibility right away. The very
question my credibility. Let me tell you my proof and where my documentation is. The Holy King James Bible. And you know what? My proof comes from God, and I think that, you know why I can trust God? Because he's a man you can take at his word. That's why.
Well, you know what, JC, I believe he could.
Would you listen to me?
Well, he's trying to.
You can take God at his word, and his word is truth, absolute, indisputable proof. Where's your indisputable proof, sir?
Can I answer now?
Yes, you may.
Okay.
If you have an answer.
I believe in God, too.
Well,
I also believe.
You may shock him with that, David, so go easily.
Okay, it's a terrible. Did you go to church?
Sorry?
Were you in church at 6 a.m. on Sunday?
JC, you don't have to go to church to believe in God.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
You go to church and you tithe.
JC, I was in church last Sunday.
What time?
What time?
Yes, what time were you in church, sir?
The service starts at 10:30, but I'm not sure.
10:30? That's laziness. You need to be in early worshiping. I go in before the sun comes up, and I don't get out of there till after noon. I think I'm a little bit more enlightened in talking about the Lord than you, someone who doesn't bother to get up out of bed to go to church until 10:30.
All right, JC. Lazy, we'll let you go, JC. He calls every once in a while, David. You are probably the most honored guest to get a phone call from him
asking
you a question.
What does JC stand for, by the way?
Jesus Christ, I think.
Oh, he's the original.
He may be.
Well, I mean, how could we argue with him?
He may be. So you were in bed while services were going on.
I'm honored.
Well,
I'm honored to have that message.
You are the first.
Mm.
Oh, my. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello, I'm on.
Yes, sir.
Okay, my name is Daryl, and I must confess, I am very fascinated with this topic. And by the way, I listen to you a lot, and I listen to Art Bell, and good work. I haven't been listening to the show long. All I want to say is what caught my attention is that there's speculation about Albert Einstein being alive. And I believe in reincarnation, not from a religious standpoint, but from a standpoint of a scholar. And I think he's alive today. He's a young man named Peter Linz. Now, I haven't emailed him that fact, but he's written some papers. He had a semester in physics. He's from New Zealand. And he has a website, so yes, I cannot prove in 1 minute that he's Albert Einstein, but I believe that very much he is, because I've looked at his work, and it sounds just like him.
Is he a physicist?
He's an amateur physicist, and he's published some papers, and he's gained a reputation on the Internet, and he doesn't keep his website up to date. I think he's busy going around the world talking about his work.
Have you heard of him, David, at all?
No, I can't say I have, no.
You know, maybe he studied Einstein. But I do believe in reincarnation as well.
I can't comment on the individual case, but, yeah, in general, reincarnation, I think, is a fascinating concept, yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't put it past anybody that Albert Einstein has come back in some form or fashion. That is possible. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Hi.
Good.
Jeff calling from North Carolina. I tell you, that JC is a hard act to follow, but I'll try to be more.
Now he's asking questions of guests. We'll never get rid of him.
just a comment and then a question for David. I'm a big fan of the ISS, the International Space Station, and you're wrong about the type of science coming out of there. There's a lot of good science and will be good science. That's my one comment. But my question to you is, I'm in the middle of a book called The Cosmic Landscape Theory by Leonard Susskind, and he wrote an article in Scientific American also, and the subtitle of his book is String Theory and the Illusion of Intelligent Design. And he answers the cosmological constant problem by stating that there's 10 to the 500th vacuum states available from string theory, and that these are... The mechanism for the change of these vacuum states is the shape-shifting of the Calabi-Yau states. And I was wondering if you had a chance to read his book and what you thought of that, and also what you thought of the variable speed of light theory of Zhao Magwei Icho.
Okay, I've not read his book. I kind of know what he's talking about. It's something that we were mentioning during the interview. We were talking about... you know, the idea that we do live in a peculiar universe that seems finely tuned for life. Susskind's response to that is, well, there's so many universes out there that you're bound to get a few that are suitable for life. We just happen to live in one, and the fact that we do live in one, we ask the question. So that's sort of his thrust of his argument against intelligent design, which, you know, the thrust of ID is that, you know, basically we live in a unique cosmos that has been specially designed for us. So, you know, he's opposing that by saying, well, we live in a huge multiverse that just throws up these possibilities from time to time. And no, I haven't read about the variable speed of light theory. There's been all sorts of notions that the speed of light is variable, but you know, at the moment, it doesn't square with observations.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us with David Darling. Hi there.
Is that me?
Yes, sir. Take it away. It's all yours.
My name is John in the Boston area.
Okay.
And first, I'd like to compliment Dr. Darling on his open-mindedness, seconding your comments, George. Unusual to find a scientist who's not so biased against considering new things.
Very open-minded.
David, I wonder if you have if you're familiar with the theory called stochastic electrodynamics, which seems to be predicting that gravity should exist. I mean, that's sort of an explanation for why it should exist and how it works.
Fill me in.
Okay. Well, the there's a website out there. Can I give that, George, or is that?
Go ahead. Sure.
Okay. It's calphysics.org. It's the California Institute of Physics.
Oh yeah,
Calphysics.org. Bernard Haish's place.
Yeah, I know Bernie Haish. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, the gist of it is that inertia and gravity, according to a fairly simple model, seem to be predictable as side effects of the zero-point electromagnetic field.
Exactly.
It's a stochastic field, and certain average properties of it lead to inertia and gravity.
Yeah.
Anyway, I find that fascinating. If it turns out to get brought into a more mainstream mode, it certainly will give a new way of looking at cosmological things, because if that zero-point field can vary locally, then all sorts of things can happen out there. My other comment or question, if you thought of this, I'm not very knowledgeable about the dark energy and all that kind of thing, but the idea that matter is seen to be expanding away from a central point in every direction, and speeding up instead of slowing down, seems to me to be possibly explained by a closed universe in which it's reached the midpoint and then it starts falling back towards the center, except the center appears to be out somewhere else. Wonder if you thought of that idea.
I haven't thought of it. I'm not sure it would actually appear that way. I think if the universe was collapsing, we would be seeing blue shifts of the galaxies, not red shifts. I think we would actually, since any point in the universe is effectively the same, there isn't actually a center to the universe. Space is expanding everywhere. I think we would actually see galaxies coming towards us, or at least be slowing down more in their motion. I don't think you'd be seeing an acceleration. I just don't think that would follow observationally. I'd have to think more about it, but I don't think that'd be the case. I think you'd see galaxies coming towards you. As far as the zero-point energy question goes, yeah, now that you put it in those terms, I do know what you're talking about. Basically, zero-point energy, the sort of ordinary world of matter and energy we see is like a foam sitting on this vast sea of quantum vacuum energy called a zero-point field. And yes, you're right. Haish explains the origin of gravity and inertia in terms of that. If we could learn to control zero-point energy, then effectively we would become masters of reactionless propulsion and gravity, which would give us huge powers. Yeah, and so that is a controversial area, but it's very, very interesting.
Stick with us. David Darling will answer more of your phone calls when we come right back. His website, daviddarling.info. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The new book that will be coming out in June is called Gravity's Arc, A-R-C. And, of course, we have also chatted with him about teleportation. I'll ask him a few more questions about that when we come back and take the rest of your calls. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, he's a scholar of ancient texts, Stephen Hirfield, and we're going to talk on our next Coast to Coast program about 2012. Stephen believes that it could really happen December 21st. 2006. That's our next Coast to Coast program. Back in a moment. And David is live in the United Kingdom, of course. How are things there these days, David?
They're pretty good. We're up north of the border here, up in Scotland.
Ah, okay.
On the east side. So, you know, we're kind of far north here. I was looking at a map, and we're sort of mid-Canadian latitude up here. So when we started the show, it was still dark out, you know. We have short days in winter, but I enjoy life here. Thanks.
Okay, there we go. Final segment here. We'll go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
George, David, this is Chip calling from the Pittsburgh area.
Hi, Chip.
I got a question about your black holes.
Yeah.
Are they really holes? Because with any hole, there's an entrance point and an exit point. And yeah. Could they also be wormholes?
Yeah, it's kind of not a very good name, really, because how can you have a hole in space? You know, you think of space as already being empty, so how can you have a hole
exactly.
in it? You know, really, you'd have to have a sort of a mind that could work in an extra dimension, really, to get the hang of it. But yeah, if you imagine the universe to be like, I don't know, like the surface of a trampoline, like a rubber sheet, okay? And then anything that has mass, you know, makes a kind of a depression in it. You know, you put like a bowling ball on a trampoline, it'll make a dip, you know? And that's kind of what happens with gravity. That's Einstein's theory. A black hole is like a pit that doesn't have an ending. It just goes on and on and on. So you never really get to the bottom of it in ordinary space. Now, if you imagine that as being like a tube and then connecting around to another part of the rubber sheet, okay, then that would be a wormhole, okay? Because you can imagine an entrance to a black hole going down the wormhole, emerging out another portal, if you like, elsewhere in the universe. That's the kind of the imagery that springs to mind when I think of black holes. It's not really a hole. It's more like a depression or a deep pit in space-time.
Well, then they should change the name to a black depression or something like that.
Yeah, it was a name that was invented by the physicist John Wheeler back in the 60s or 70s or something. It's just stuck, you know. It's just a word. And the trouble is sometimes, you know, you put... You get an impression of something from a name. And so, yeah, it's maybe not a very good name, but it's just the one that's stuck.
Okay, thanks for your call. What will it take, David, for science to begin to really get some of the answers of the many things you've talked about tonight? Technology will do it? What will do it?
Yeah, it's a combination. I mean, you do need the technology. You need the more powerful telescopes, which are coming along. I mean, we've got some amazing equipment around the world now, linking these telescopes together so that they're like the aperture of a giant telescope, so you can gather more information. Getting into new areas like probing gravity waves that we talked of, because most of the information comes to us in the form of light and radio waves or the EM radiation. If we can get to look at gravity waves, for example, that gives us a whole new vista on the universe. More powerful computers allow it to run the simulations. So technology, theory, observation running alongside one another. And all of these things are accelerating at the moment. So we can look forward to tremendous breakthroughs in the next, you know, 10 to 20 years.
Will we ever get to the point where we will see the light from the Big Bang with these brand new telescopes?
Well, we can see light from pretty close to the Big Bang. The thing is that the Big Bang was actually dark. It didn't actually emit light. The light that we can see comes from about, 300,000 years after the black hole, so after the Big Bang. So, you know, we would need other eyes, if you would like. Maybe our gravity wave detectors will allow us to image the gravity waves coming from the Big Bang. We won't be able to see it in actual light, but we might be able to see it at other wavelengths or in other registers of such as gravity waves.
Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello. How you doing? My name's Will. I'm in Miami.
Hi, Will. Go ahead, sir.
I want to thank you guys. It's great. I wish you guys were on every night. I have a story. I want to set it up. I'm a musician. I was playing a gig about 15 years ago. I met a gentleman there. We got to talk, and I brought up that I had just read a book about the Roswell incident. And he ends up telling me that he was in naval intelligence and that he actually knew Bob Lazar, you know, the guy that broke the whole Roswell thing, Area 51. Anyway, he went on to sketch on a bar napkin the extraterrestrial craft that was supposedly recovered. And he went on to sketch the propulsion system of this aircraft. A spacecraft, and he proceeded to tell me how it works. I'm not a physicist, though, so things were just like whizzing over my head. I just couldn't really quite grasp it. And then a few weeks later, he introduced me to some friends of his that were visiting here from Area 51 and still work there. And my question is, do you think that since like the fall of the Iron Curtain and declassification of sensitive military secrets as of late, you think things are so relaxed that this could actually occur? That, I mean, the guy was seemed very sincere. I mean, he was a middle-aged man, had no apparent motives other than to just simply inform me of this. Do you feel that things have relaxed so much so that this could happen?
Boy, there's so many different chains to that argument that it's hard to know where to begin. You know, first of all, the reliability of the guy you're talking to. I mean, many people can seem sincere but still be fabricating what they're saying. I'm not saying he was, but, you know, that would be the first chain of the whole thing to investigate. You know, I've had people tell me things very, very sincerely that, you know, would involve UFOs, and I just have to take them at face value that, you know, that they are at least trying to get across to me something that actually happened. But, you know, when you've got chains of like that, where it's hearsay based on hearsay based on hearsay, you know, how can I even comment on it? You know, all I can say is, well, you know, maybe it's possible, but I don't have any more insight into it than you do, you know. As far as something sketched on the back of a, you know, a napkin, you're not going to be able to convey all the physics of an anti-gravity device or whatever it was, a propulsion system, in that way. You know, I mean, you'd need volumes to get it across. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm very skeptical of that. You know, of that kind of evidence. You know, I would have to. I always look for the mundane first. You know, it's kind of boring, but I do. I think, well, is this guy telling me the truth, first of all? Where did he get his information from? And then follow the chain back. So all I can say is it's possible. You know, well, what else can I say?
Yeah, it's just, you know, the sketches were simple. It's his description of it. I mean, the man was obviously a physicist.
Well, not obviously. He may have sounded like a physicist. I mean, he may have been a guy who's read some science books. You can sound pretty technical without actually making any sense, you know. I've got a drawer full of anti-gravity device plans, but you know, I can pick holes. Yeah, they're said by sincere people. And I mean, you can call them cranks. Maybe some of them are legitimately cranks, but most of them are, you know, serious amateur scientists who've thought about this. You know, they think these are genuine designs they can be put together, but. You know, you've got to go further than that. You've actually got to build a working prototype if anybody's going to take you seriously. You know, anti-gravity devices are a dime a dozen, you know, and it's the same as perpetual motion machines. There's got to be some beef behind it, you know. You've got to have something that makes people sit up and say, hey, this really is something going on here, you know.
All right, well, thank you for your call. And by the way, we are on every night in Miami, number one, by the way, on WIOD. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George, this is Bill in Las Vegas.
Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi. It's such a pleasure when you have such a fine guest. And I wanted to make a couple of comments. First of all, my dad was a senior scientist for DOD, so I'm used to hearing people talk like this. But my dad also talked very openly with me, and he believed in God, too. So it's really refreshing to hear such a fine guest as you have speaking along the same lines. I wanted to make mention, and your guest probably has heard of this particular galaxy. It's in the New Galactic Catalog. I think it's NGC 2258, if my memory serves correctly on the numbers. But there's a galaxy that's been imaged by Hubble, and it's in retrograde motion, which has stumped a lot of astronomers. And I wanted to pose that in relation to dark matter, dark energy, and or antimatter, anti-energy, and how it may be correlated in reverse time, perhaps.
What do you mean by retrograde motion, first of all?
Well, you know how when a galaxy spins, the arms trail, they trail. But in the case of this particular galaxy, and I'd be surprised if you hadn't heard of it.
Goes the other way, right?
Right. The arms would be leading the spinning motion, so you'd have retrograde. And there seems to be no explanation that I've heard of, but I thought you might have.
It was like that opening story we were talking about, David.
Right, except it's for a whole galaxy.
What is the number you've got again for that?
I think it's NGC 2258, if memory serves me correctly. I know there's a 22 in there.
I'm going to have to show my ignorance on this because I don't know about this story. What I will do is, as soon as we're offline, I'll look into this, and if I find out anything about it, I will post a page on this galaxy.
On your website,
I have a 10,000-page encyclopedia on my website. If anybody wants to look up things like, you know, black holes, zero-point energy, anti-gravity, they'll find a page on my website. If I do, if I can verify and find something interesting about this, I'll put a page up over the next day or two and put my comments on there. I can't do any more at this stage because I don't know the story behind it.
Okay, let's go next to our wildcard line. Welcome to Coast to Coaster on the air with us. Hi there.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Hi.
This is Wesley from the thriving metropolis of Louisville, Tennessee.
Well, go for it, Wesley.
Doctor, have you heard of the causal proof that St. Thomas Aquinas offered for the existence of God? He referred to God as the uncaused cause.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Does that hold any credibility as far as you're concerned from a scientific viewpoint?
What do you understand by that term that he was talking about?
Well,
are you talking about...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You talk first.
That we live in a causal effect reality, and that at some point there had to be a cause that...
Yeah.
By itself was uncaused.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess that is the huge point of discussion we talked about the origin of the universe. What happened first, okay? And we were saying, you know, that cosmology has a problem with that because, you know, something, there had to be something to begin with, whether it was the laws of physics or whether it was something. There had to be some initiating act. And you're absolutely right about that. Religion also has a problem, though, because if you invoke God as the first effect, as it were, then where did God come from? And I don't buy this notion of, well, you know, God's supernatural, and therefore we don't have an explanation for that. You know, that's just passing the buck again. So you still have that problem of what came first, you know, whether you invoke God as an omnipotent being, you know, where did God come from?
You know, we may never get that answer, David.
Maybe it is the ultimate mystery. Maybe our minds are simply not capable of apprehending that. That's true.
Do you believe in life after death?
I do. I didn't used to. I guess when I was in my late 20s, maybe to about the age of 30, I was not exactly an atheist, but I just had so strict a scientific viewpoint that I put up all kinds of arguments. Now I'm very much convinced that there is something beyond.
What changed you?
Just the fact that science didn't have the answers, I guess. Mainstream science didn't have the answers.
Yeah.
You know, you just keep running up against brick walls, and you thought, well, there's something beyond science, and we need to combine science with other modes of knowledge. It's not good enough on its own.
All right, next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello?
Yes, my name is Keith. I'm calling from Olympia.
Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Washington. Go ahead.
Yes. I was watching the Science Channel a couple weeks ago, and on there was this the scientist that was talking about how she was crunching numbers concerning gravity, and the numbers that she was crunching really didn't work until she had come up with this sort of theory that that gravity kind of leaked in from another universe, actually. And when she kind of, you know, plugged that in, the theory that she was working on worked. Do you know anything about that? Do you have any idea?
No, you'd have to be a bit, but I haven't seen the show for one thing. I'd need to be a little bit more specific about what couldn't be explained and what needed to be explained.
Right. They didn't really get into it other than the fact that she was pretty excited with this discovery that gravity may be coming from, you know, from another universe entirely.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, you got to look at what gravity is, you know, and how can gravity leak? You know, what do you think gravity is to begin with? Gravity, in general relativity, is the curvature of space. How can the curvature of space leak in? And you know, so I don't know. I don't know how gravity could leak in. Matter could leak in, which would be a source of gravity.
Right. You know, I think it also, did it have anything to do with the pioneers, where one of the possibilities were these extra dimensions or universes were causing it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I haven't heard that particular theory, but if you're talking about gravity leaking in, then I think you'd have to be talking about some kind of energy or matter leaking in. That would be the actual thing that was doing the leaking, you know. But I guess it's just one of these theories that's been thrown up to explain the pioneer anomaly. I think actually that probably will involve some kind of new physics, but that's just my own opinion on it.
I think it'll be fantastic. My gosh, what a story it'll be, David. If scientists can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are other universes somewhere, and I was going to say other universes in our what? What can you say? If you have a multi-universe complexity, what would you call everything?
Well, the term they use is multiverse.
Okay? The multiverse.
Which is going one better than the universe, which just means one verse. I'm not sure what the verse bit means, but multiverse. So, you know, that will be a hierarchy of universes, you know.
Do you believe that there is intelligent life out there, either in the multiverse or just our universe beyond us?
Yeah, I do. I'm a great believer that life is probably pretty common. You know, I think we're going to find life in the solar system. Within the next 20 years. I wouldn't be surprised if there's three other worlds in the solar system that had some form of life on them. You know, Mars, I'd put at number one. I'd probably put Titan up there as well.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Venus?
Either the atmosphere of Venus or, you know, the ocean on Europa as another one. I wouldn't be surprised if we find varied life on at least three other worlds. Intelligent life, I think there's a huge amount of it out there. Most of it's more advanced than us, way, way advanced.
I think so, too. And even in our solar system, I think if, let's say, Mars or Titan or even Venus all had our, you know, type of complexity, I think intelligent life probably would have developed the same way.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is that intelligent life could develop a lot faster than it did it on Earth. It could, you know, if you got an oxygen atmosphere early on, you could get it happening in 100 million years. And then, you know, maybe it's left its world, you know, and left maybe most of the traces of it, you know. So
maybe they came here, David.
Maybe they came here. Yep.
You never know. Hey, good luck, David Darlene. Appreciate it. And in June, we can look for the new book, which is not too far away.
Yep.
Gravity's Ark. Okay.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
David Darlene, live in Scotland in the United Kingdom, where I like him. He's a good guest. He reminds me a little bit of Michio Kaku. He's got that same kind of feel to it. So stick with us. We've got a whole week of entire great coast-to-coast programs for you. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.